Letting go of what is worthless. It is true that I rarely know the weather forecast. A friend of mine who makes weather awareness a central part of her life regularly makes fun of me. Late one summer afternoon, a storm was coming through Athens, Ohio, the small town in southeast Ohio where I lived. I love storms. I love seeing the front approach across the broad expanse of sky. I went outside to enjoy the color of the clouds that changed between grays and blues and greens, the stillness, the edge of the front arriving. I felt the power of the wind and saw the turmoil in the trees moved by the rush of air. Then the storm was over. The next morning, I was coincidentally driving to Chicago and left very early before dawn. The main street in the small town I would pass through on the way to the expressway was blocked by firefighters. I could only see the neon stripes of their jackets and the neon stripes on barricades blocking the street. I was puzzled, what is going on? I turned around and took another route. En route, I turned on NPR and I heard there had been a tornado in southeast Ohio. I needed somebody from Washington to tell me what had happened in my own backyard. Our faculties and perception of the world do not always provide us with the valuable information we need. We have been brought up in what is very often labeled as an individualistic culture, where relying on ourselves is heralded. We often rely on our own perspective and are hesitant to reach out for ideas, information, and support. And yet, in the Bible, story after story, we learn that God wants us to be in community. God means for us to be in community, to listen and learn from each other. God means for us to be vulnerable with each other, to solicit feedback, even when it's uncomfortable. God wants us to be aware of how others touch and have an impact on us, and to be aware of how our words and actions impact others. As surely as the wind surrounds us before a tornado. Immersed in an individualistic culture, we wear blinders, shutting out others, and in so doing, lose our perspective and hold onto many things that no longer serve us in a life-giving way. Our basements, our garages, our cupboards are filled with these things. But it is not just things that weigh us down. We might idolize past experiences which do not serve us well, or feel the weight of shame for not measuring up, or guilt for transgressing in some way. We might look into the future hoping what is unfulfilled will become fulfilled without really considering what is of value and the stepping stones necessary to achieve what is most dear to us. We hesitate to open ourselves to what is new. Researchers that study human behavior tell us that when we listen to the news, we sort it out and take in the news that confirms what we already know and believe. It's called confirmation bias. I used to think we passively just found ourselves in silos of people like us on the internet, but we are actually seeking out the silos. We run toward them. This is true of the right, the left, and those in the center. We hold on to the illusion that we can function largely independently. We rely on our limited faculties, and left to ourselves, we dig cisterns, as Jeremiah talked about today, in which to store our things, our shame, our guilt, our ideas that need re-examining. We build cisterns to hold what seems of value, but they crack and leak with the weight of things, emotions, and ideas that are destructive to us. Alif Shafak is a Turkish writer. She advocates for us to free ourselves from attachment. The books we cannot write, the films we cannot shoot, the projects we cannot develop, the jobs we cannot pursue, and the people who no longer love us. Being able to let go at times is the most beautiful of all, she writes. This quotation gives me a sense of relief. Why? I think Alif is perhaps connecting to all the comparisons I might make between myself and others. I mistakenly think I'm free of doing this, comparing myself to others. But if I were free, I wouldn't feel relief reading these words. Somewhere in my psyche, I am longing for the satisfaction of writing that book, or being a CEO of a fossil fuel company with the insight and power to lead the company to renewable energy, or mending relationships that are no longer possible to mend. In comparing ourselves to others, we might easily experience envy of what others have accomplished, and at the same time experience pain because we have not gotten clear on what we're longing for and how to accomplish it. In a Christian context, letting go of envy means grieving, feeling the sadness of when we diminish ourselves by comparing ourselves to others, seeing the judgments and feeling their pain and acknowledging the shame for not measuring up. As we grieve, we want to identify what all that sadness and shame are connected to. We want to discover beneath it all what we are in fact wanting, valuing. If I want to be a CEO in charge of a fossil fuel company, I'm probably feeling distressed and worried and fearful for the future of life on Earth. Maybe I'm feeling shame for not having made my voice known in effective ways in the past. And I'm probably valuing contribution, longing to help shift public opinion and laws towards sustainability. When I do this grieving, I'm opening myself to what I am longing for, and with clarity, I'm free to discover how I can, in fact, make a difference and contribute. I'm connecting to a divine creative force, to God. I don't believe letting go, as Ms. Shafak says, means giving up or giving up something we value. I believe it means feeling the sadness, grieving, and discovering what is beneath it, discovering the something that we're longing for. The benefit of community, of this very congregation, is that we have companions with whom we might discern a path toward fulfilling our deepest values. Jeremiah reminds us to notice the windbags, whether they are around us or whether the windbag is us. In the story of Genesis, in which humans are forced to leave the Garden of Paradise, we are Adam and Eve. We experience the pain of having left, and yet we have the consciousness to know that we still exist in a garden of plenty. We can let go of what pollutes our lives and discover God's abundance. God is not centered in us, but is ever presently available to us as a fount of living water, a secure cistern offering us this abundant resource. It is not independence relying on our own faculties, but interdependence that sustains us. We can actually grieve alone, by ourselves. But if we believe in an ever-present God, then we are never alone. God is with us. And God is also with us when we grieve with a partner or a counselor or community. Being able to process our grief in community within an emotionally safe forum is a beautiful thing. In my story, in which I didn't pay attention to the weather, I was relying on my own observations versus seeking more information with support from others. In our spiritual lives, we need partners, companions along the way who can help us see the larger picture and who can help us get back in touch with what gives us life, get back in touch with the divine. Church is about seeking God in community. Congregations, too, can compare themselves to others as individuals do. In our progressive mainline churches, we have seen smaller and smaller congregations, and we wonder what it would be like to have more people, more financial stability, and compare ourselves to larger congregations. We, too, might benefit from asking what kind of hurt lives in us here at Church of the Three Crosses. How can we remember God brought us into a garden of abundance? In the next few months, I will work with the transition committee, which council will help form. We will outline a path forward, how we will address some of the stresses and tension Church of the Three Crosses has experienced and is experiencing. I trust we will be able to figure out what is of value, what will help heal, and what will enliven the beautiful spirit that is already here. Frederick Buechner writes, "A sacrament is the breaking through of the sacred into the profane. It is God offering holiness to people. It is a transparent time, time when you see through to something deep inside of time. It is that which enables you to catch a glimpse of the almost unbearable preciousness and mystery of life. A sacrament, then, is not only what we have made into rituals, baptism and communion, and these are beautiful sacraments, but any conversation, any meeting of the eyes, any time together in which God blesses us and we feel the unbearable preciousness and mystery of life. We know the holy has touched us because we can feel it at once in our bodies, minds, and spirits. The holy moves us to be in awe, to let go of whatever imprisons us. The holy moves us to be alive with playfulness and joy. We might then aim to connect with God by ourselves, but if we do, not for long, as God continually calls us into community. And I want to call attention to the importance of trust when we can't see what God is doing. Trust that God is working in ways we do not know, even in this moment. Trust that though the water we live in is clear and we can't see it, God surrounds us and is fulfilling God's work, the fullness of which we cannot conceive. I grew up in Urbana, Illinois, and attended Urbana High School, 2 hours south of here. I knew a boy in my class named Brian Jackson. I believe Brian's behavior would be categorized on a spectrum of autism today. As a high schooler, I remember Brian at the end of a second floor hallway, talking to no one in particular, or maybe everyone who was passing. He would talk nonstop, reciting numbers, lots of numbers, sports scores, and team trivia for both professional sports teams and Urbana High School sports teams. He was a one-man sports program without an editor. I went to a high school reunion and had the good fortune to run into Brian. He said, "Leslie, I remember when your brother Paul made it to the state track and field meet in the mile, and he ran, and he told me how fast my brother had run. And then he told me about my own sports involvement in high school with amazing accuracy." Brian paid attention. He had in some way kept me and my family in his heart and mind all these years, unbeknownst to me. God holds us in this way. Even though we may not see or perceive it, God's love and God's grace is ever present. It is also possible for us to hold each other in this way, to be a fount of living water for each other.